The Annie Altman Show podcast and other projects are field research for the Hugh Manny. Hey, it's Annie. Please check out and share the website, Patreon, and Etsy to help support these projects and my self-project. The Hugh Manny is a one-woman show about how no one ever fully figures out how to be a human being, how there's themes of the human being experience organized into 10 C words connected by the theme of connection, and how discussing these themes we all experience somehow is my best idea to contribute to minimizing unnecessary human suffering through maximizing resource equity. That was a lot of words. Maybe note when you hear the words connection, consciousness, choice, change, compassion, communication, community, creation, charge, curiosity, and/or courage in this episode. That's also a lot of words. Here's some more.
Hello.
Hey, Orly, we're live.
Hello, yay, listeners, and welcome to The Annie Altman Show, the podcast, season 5. Today, I'm so lucky I get to be here with Orly Klempner for her third time on the podcast. We are here for the 8th episode of the Community C series, talking about family systems and community. Thank you so much for being here and recording through the Anchor app. Orly, it's good to hear you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and a privilege.
I'm glad to have, I looked back at one of our recordings was almost exactly 2 years ago. So I feel very
proud
to come back around to podcast again.
Yeah, from different states.
Yes. Yeah, the first one we did about alignment being space and forgiveness has really.
I remember that one. How long ago was that one?
That was 3 years ago.
Or wow.
A little over 3 years ago. I know, right? Time is so weird. I would love for you to share, if this is people's first time getting to hear you, a little bit about yourself, sort of whatever feels good to you to share about yourself with a podcast audience, about what brings you joy, what you feel passionate about, things about your upbringing. Platform is yours.
Awesome. Thank you. So I grew up here in Los Angeles, California, and I live with my favorite little doggy, and he's my best bud. I was born and raised here and grew up with immigrant parents, and was taught to work very hard, which I'm grateful for. And then grew up to become a producer in advertising and found my way early on, like in high school, into yoga, but eventually left the advertising world to teach yoga, which then led into teaching meditation and mindfulness to both youth and adults. And then, so one thing led into another, and not just the career path, but events in my own life led me down this career path. So from mindfulness to coaching and embarking on this journey down internal family systems. And so that's what I use to coach. I still teach yoga, just a lot less of it. And that is actually what I'm really passionate about, is internal family systems and sharing that with kids and adults. And as I've learned and befriended and have been with my parts, I just really want to share that with other people and help them be with their parts, which is a term we use in internal family systems. You know, we're all made up of, we're one human and we're made up of a bunch of different parts. And so just getting to know all those parts. So yeah, that's me.
Thank you for being so thorough and for sharing a little bit about internal family systems also, and walking through the different things that have led you there.
Thank you.
I'd love.
Yeah, and yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I would love to hear more about, I'd love to start with an introduction to IFS, internal family systems, for people who aren't familiar. This is maybe their first time hearing about it. And then it sounds fun to me to go back through and connect the different things you've done along that path of how IFS is connected to the yoga community and teaching privately in studios, and also to advertising, and kind of go through and look at how the systems are one big system. Mm-hmm. First, starting with what is IFS if someone's never heard of it?
Right. IFS is internal family systems. It is a model that is used in clinical psychology and coaching. And its approach is, like I said, this one human body is made up of a lot of parts. And I'm not talking about physical parts, but mental parts. And so we have, the parts are broken down like this. So we all have a self, which is actually not a part. You might call it your true essence, your true self. Your truth, you know, it's that part that's like has instincts, discernment, compassion, qualities like confidence, courage, curiosity, lots of qualities that start with the letter C. And kind of like your podcast series is. And there are points in our life, usually very early on, where these parts are developed. And parts are, you know, there are creative parts, there are very intelligent parts. But somewhere along the line, something happens where a part might be misdirected into protecting the self in a way that feels necessary to essentially survive and to feel safe as best as it can. And so this might be like, you know, if the first thing that's coming to my mind is like, if a child is neglected by their parents, you know, and maybe the parents are like very well to do, but they're just not around a lot because they're so busy being well to do. And so this child isn't being heard, isn't hearing like, I love you, and not being hugged and not being played with. And so it might start to have what is seen from the outside behaviors to cope with that. And what it looks like more on the inner world is a part that, you know, is protecting it from feeling neglected, from feeling all alone. And that might look like the protectors are divided into two categories, according to IFS, which are firefighters and managers. So managers are kind of just, as it sounds, like just take control of the situation, control of your life, and want to feel in control because of situations that have made the system feel out of control or confused or in the dark in some way. And so, I have a manager that just is very clean, very organized, and I get a lot of joy out of organizing. And so that part also really loves like stationery and, you know, having like color coded calendars, and it just really helps to feel, and to-do lists, right? Feel in control. And, part of those managers are like planners and doers. And then you've got firefighters who are, just as it sounds, they put the fire out, right? So when the system is feeling overwhelmed, they cut ties with whatever and put the fire out in some way. So it's a very impulsive part that might be expressed as a drug intake or food or sex or even rage, right? Reacting in rage. Shopping for some people, and the ultimate one is suicide. And so those are our protective parts. What are they protecting? What are they protecting? So usually these protective parts come in and protect a wounded part, a part that's been exiled. And again, just as it sounds, this part has been exiled because when we have felt this pain early on, it was just so painful that we had to exile this part so we wouldn't feel the pain anymore, and have this protective part come in because an adult or some caregiver wasn't there to protect. And not always out of neglect or some ill intention, but just in that very moment where a child needs to make sense of something, might make sense of it in that it there's a part of it that has to come in instead of a caregiver, because there is no caregiver to come in and protect. So they make sense of it with these protectors coming in and shoving the wounded part down so that it doesn't have to feel alone or in pain anymore. So instead it'll feel rage, or because that feels better, you know, that is a way of surviving. And ultimately, these wounded parts have been left alone to be in pain on their own. And so there's a loss of trust along the way. So these protective parts, you know, manifest into our adulthood, and they may not trust you as an adult, or they kind of not even know that you're an adult because they're so stuck in the past that they can't trust that you can actually protect yourself now, or that you can even like tap into this wounded part and heal this wounded part now. It just has to continue protecting you. So in IFS, we talk.
Wait, I want to take a pause there. That was so much good information, and I want to let some of that sink in and also really highlight what you were bringing up about protection and trust, and also the overall system and how there's this dance between looking at parts individually and also looking at how the parts connect as a system. And like you said, one will come in to fill a space that wasn't there, to use anger to move through sadness to something else, that's happening with learning to trust this overall self that I want to highlight too, and what you were just talking about of your essence, your self, whatever word feels good and true for you, that
that's right
is, I don't know what words feel good for you here, of like bigger than yourself, separate mm-hmm. from yourself. The observer is one I've heard in like, so I wanted to pause to highlight those things. And thank you. Yeah, thank you. And for being again so thorough about it, and also sharing about one of your own parts, because I feel like examples are super helpful.
For sure. Well, I mean, like, here's an example. Like, you know how there are times where you've got thoughts, right? And these thoughts are like telling you, like, oh, maybe that's not a good idea to do this thing. And then then there's another thought that comes in and is like, but I really want to. I'm going to do it anyway, you know? And so these are like two parts arguing with each other. And the trick is, with practice and time, right, is paying attention to these parts and giving them the floor, and not exactly acting on them, but giving them the floor to hear them out. Because again,
I love that language.
Again, they've been left alone to be in pain. So if we can help them feel heard, and like, we're there now, maybe we weren't there before, but now I'm an adult and I can be there now, then they might be more apt to healing and doing what they're really here to do. Because these protective parts, we never ask parts to go away. Like, healing them doesn't make them go away. They actually stay. But they are, like I said in the beginning, they've been misdirected. So now they would just be directed in a direction that works for our own system. Maybe it's, you know, writing instead of writing to-do lists, like writing creative stories instead of writing to-do lists or something like that. I just pulled that randomly. But so, you know, with these two arguing parts, you know, whichever part is more here for that person, if they're more pulled to doing the thing, then listening to that and being with it. And in that, you find agency to make a choice of your action. And the part is not driving your action, if that makes sense.
Yes, definitely. One of my favorite metaphors, the movie Inside Out is a helpful small version, I find, too. The metaphor of yourself driving the car and all the parts are riding along. So they're all part of it. And it's who is driving the vehicle.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I really appreciate you bringing up I really love that language, again, of giving it the floor that part is coming up and out because it wants and needs to be seen and heard and felt and looked at, all the things. It's there for some reason. And maybe for the car metaphor, it has some information about directions or about stop along the way. Or it can still be useful and helpful and fun, like you were talking about. I wanted to bring up too with your part about organizing, and maybe there is some part of that that would rather to creative writing or other kinds of putting that writing energy elsewhere. Maybe also there's a part of that that really serves you, that feels really good to make a grocery list or whatever the list part
is. It
helps
you feel safe. Yeah, because it helps the system feel safe in a way, right? Like, it's...
Yes, I maybe that can also, and I'm saying, like, in my own experience, enjoying making grocery lists, for example, even if I get different mm-hmm. things on it,
right?
That maybe there's a part of that joy. That is, yeah, that it's not just in the, you know, like, this is all about, I say this also as a, like, well, where is the healing here and the psychoanalysis and what's going on?
That's right,
this,
yeah.
Also, maybe there is a fun part that it feels, that part feels, yeah, it's having fun, feels useful, feels alive, making a grocery list.
That's right, yeah. And they don't all, you know, they don't always have to be healed or, you know, analyzed. Well, they don't ever have to be analyzed. But the, like what I was going to say is that there's no bad parts. They all are well-intentioned. Like with your analogy of driving the car, you know, they have an intention. Like they might be screaming from the backseat trying to drive the car because they're like, but I just really think that if we stopped at this one stop, it would be so cool and you're going to love it. You know, it has these great intentions. They have these great intentions. They never have a bad intention for the system. All they are trying to do is to bring the system back to homeostasis, back to balance, you know, and it's just sometimes they themselves are stuck at an age that is a child's age, and children don't always know what's best for them, and they need that caregiver. That's where the self can come in and say, yeah, I hear you. You really want to stop there and, you know, think that, but we just don't have the time for it today. And so maybe tomorrow we'll stop there and see this cool thing you really wanted to see. But today we're going to keep going. And that's actually a really crucial part to all of this is that kindness. Right? Like, we wouldn't turn around in the car. I like this analogy of the car, so I'm going to keep going with it. But we wouldn't turn around to the passenger, the part that's sitting in the back seat, like, shut up, you know? We're not stopping there today. No, that is only going to make it scream louder. It's only going to be in more pain because it's, again, being shoved down by essentially another part that's, you know, rageful. But if we were to instead say like, hey, honey, you know, like you would to a child, like, I know you really want to stop there, really feel excited. And I would feel so excited too. But right now we're not going to stop there. But I promise you that I'm going to, you know, hear why you want to stop there or whatever it is, you know, maybe we'll stop there tomorrow. Like you're going to come back in some way. And I think that difference of tone makes all the difference. And that's what studies have shown too. It's not just what I think.
Yeah. Well, the tone and also the time, the literal giving time and attention and energy.
That's right.
It's important to me. It's important to the overall community system what you have to share and what you mm-hmm. care about and want and need. And that brings what you were bringing up about neglect. And you were going around the words of fragmentation and splintering off. And mm-hmm. I'm curious, too, before or maybe sort of as going into the next part about how applied, now that we have the groundwork of it, I'd mm-hmm. love to hear about more about that background, just generally or in your experience working with your different parts, about going back to a first memory, going back to a repeated memory, tracing mm-hmm. through the patterns to say, when did this part not get attention, like you were bringing up?
Right. Yeah, and I mean, the way we investigate is really connecting to that self-energy that has curiosity and being able to essentially interview these parts and ask them, like, so when did you come online? What's your role? What's your job? And share. And it will, I mean, when you give it the floor, it will just streamline these memories and make it all make sense for you. And, you know, and a common response I get to that explanation is like, why do we have to go back? Like, why can't we move on? And the thing is that these parts haven't moved on and they are within your system. And so they deserve the attention. And so some of my parts that I've worked through, I mean, I have a therapist that I've been seeing now for a handful of years, and she's the one who introduced me to IFS about, I want to say like 4 years ago, maybe. So not that long, but I mean, a lot can happen in a short amount of time. If you're willing, if your system is willing to get to know its parts. And I began with actually earthquakes. Like I said, I was born and raised here in Los Angeles, and we have a lot of earthquakes here. And so when we have an earthquake, you know, today, like, when this happened, it was, I mean, the parts, again, they still come up, they don't fully go away. So let's see, we had one like 2 months ago or something here, very, very small, but enough for me to feel it. And this part will just automatically come up, and it's a part that, you know, I've worked a lot with it now, so it doesn't override me today. And I'm not saying that it's not going to, you know, there might be a time where it will, but there has been times where it has. And those times, like a couple years ago, year ago even, where we've had some earthquakes, and this part will come up and say, you're not going to sleep. You know, we're going to stay up all night and be in control and be ready, you know. And then, you know, it manages to do these things around the home that makes sure that I'm ready, which is a great part of the part, right? Like, shoes by the bed, earthquake emergency kit. I mean, these are all very good things to keep me safe and help my system feel safe if I have a plan on, you know, how to get out and stuff like that. Now, this part also feels the need to, like, leave the house during an earthquake and to just feel in control by being aware, so not falling too deep into sleep and what have you. So it's that's what I knew about it, right, when I first started working on it. And when my therapist would ask me, you know, okay, so is it okay that it's here, or no, sorry, she would ask, like, what is it afraid of would happen if, you know, you went to sleep? And I mean, when I was like in these, and mind you, this is like, I have some PTSD around this. So when I'm saying overdrive, this part goes into overdrive, it's like full overdrive. You know, serious fears around it. So, so she'd ask me, what are you afraid of? And it wouldn't be willing to even think about what would happen if I went to sleep. It was like, no, I have to be here, you know? And then from that to just, okay, let's see if we can be with it a little bit. And by being with it a little bit, if it is overwhelming, asking it to not overwhelm you, and getting a little bit more trusting with it, right? And then allowing that to reveal some stuff to you. And so to not, you know, go into the, I mean, it was years of work, so I won't bore you with all the details, but the, what we finally went back to is like, when I was 9 years old was when we had our major earthquake over here. And it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was ejected from my bed and thrown across the room and landed on top of my brother. And it was like over 4 minutes long or something like that. And so it was like a hell of a ride, and a very traumatic thing happened where I was like thrown and woken up that way, right? So of course this part wants to stay awake and not be what is the word I'm looking for? Like not be sprung up on like that again. And literally feels like it's going to die if we're not prepared. So I can't really see another way out of it. So it really takes time to let these parts who can't see another way out to be and exist, and then eventually they soften and they are willing to see, okay, is there another way to handle this? You know, is there another way to be with this? And part of that is really like admitting, you know, yeah, earthquakes are scary. Like it's really normal to be scared of them and to scream and to have these feelings. And also it's possible to sleep normally and be prepared, do the best that you can to be prepared. And, you know, so it's this 37 year old self that has to be with this 9 year old girl who is just really scared out of her wits, you know, and who still is, but now she trusts me, and I can say, we can go to the bed, we can, you know, go into another room that's like not so close to the front door. That was part of it. I needed to be close to the front door. So yeah, they will reveal to you where they began. And part of, you know, what it was this protecting, right? That's what we essentially want to get to. This part was protecting a little girl that was so scared, like this part that feels needs to be in control. This part that was so scared that did express herself in a way that was super scared, and it wasn't accepted by the adults around her. You know, my father would, and for his own protection, it would be like, okay, you know, calm down kind of thing. And parents do this, and it's all well-intentioned and stuff. But when you stop a child from naturally expressing itself, it then thinks that it has to stop expressing itself, right? So it's shutting down that wounded part, the part that's in pain, and it's leaving it to be in pain alone. And I hope that's making sense. You know, I'm not getting too out there for people, but yeah. So it's
still making sense.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say, so this part, this wounded, this protective part was like, gotta control the reaction and eventually and essentially control the environment so that that reaction doesn't even happen. And why does it react that way? Because it's scared of this like thing that's shown, you know, death. I mean, the hours later, whatever, when we were able to turn on the television, you're seeing like these cop cars driving down the freeway. They don't realize the freeway's broken and they just like fell off to their deaths. Like as a little girl, I'm like seeing all the damage, and then, you know, this apartment building right by our house, the whole first floor caved through. So, you know, people were in their beds. So it was really like, it wasn't just that moment of being flung from my bed across the room, but many moments after that of just being proven that this causes death, and it felt that way. So yeah, minimizing my voice. And so how does that manifest into, you know, adulthood? Like many relationships where I've minimized my voice, if I have gotten excited about anything, even joyous excitement. Like I remember getting my first car and my dad was helping me negotiate, and I started getting really excited. And he was like, again, you know, not saying he's a bad man, he did this out of what good intentions, but to not give the car salesman like this idea that like, yeah, we're gonna get it, you know, like he wanted to keep the cool and keep calm. So it was like, shh, don't be so excited, you know. And so it was, I've just been shown time and time again to minimize, and that part plays in, like making me bad for expressing, if that makes sense. So very layered, right? Like it's not just black and white, like, okay, now I feel the need to control my environment because of this one thing. It branches, and like different parts work with each other, different parts work against each other, to essentially protect that wounded part, and many wounded parts. We all have them.
Yes, I'd like to go more into that. And also I appreciate you sharing specific examples again, and a lot of hearing in that from your experiences and feeling from my own is the voice of shame, and shame coming up to, in most people's experience, be parroting a voice of one of their parents, mm-hmm, or some adult when they were little, that is the feeling about the feeling. When you have the feeling, like, mm-hmm, you gave the example as a child, that you have the response to reality. Your emotional, mm-hmm, response makes sense for what is happening, especially as a child who doesn't have the tools to do things to physically protect and doesn't the experience and all these other things, that then to have that experience of shame of being told in some capacity that expressing yourself in that way is wrong,
mm-hmm,
is such a human theme that then sticks with us, that we play out, like you were bringing up too, in our other relationships of being still, like you were saying, of still there, still wants to be heard, or still feeling that shame about not getting to be heard, mm-hmm, in the past. And yeah. So I'm glad you brought up that part. I feel like that can be the most challenging part to sit with, is the pain, and then being honest, mm-hmm, about whatever the emotion is, and saying that it, knowing that it is okay, whatever it is, and being real how it felt to
have it not be heard. And the other thing I want to touch on too, and then connect this to experiences you've had with teaching yoga and meditation, advertising your own body, different things throughout your lifetime, is so I find often in spiritual communities and in my own experience of my own spirituality and emotional health and all of it, to I find this tendency of spiritual passing where I can get so focused on being present and being in the now that I can down of feeling the feeling of whatever age of Annie is seeking attention, and
right,
that it is part of the present and that it is here in the mm-hmm. present to teach something. And I'm really glad to hear, and I'm curious how IFS and just generally the overall system's focus influences your guiding and your own yoga and meditation practices, because I know for me it's been hugely influential of allowing period, all of it, what is currently happening, the past feelings and experiences, memories that might be coming up, the shame or judgments that may be coming up, the, like you were saying, the layering of realizing, oh, this was this parent or this caregiver's voice, or this was this moment of neglect or being shamed, going through it, and like our first podcast title of alignment is space and forgiveness.
Right. Yeah. So much there. I hope I speak to it all. Yeah, thank you for that. It's so true. It's like there's so much spiritual bypass, and really the question is, you know, what, who is here that's asking for attention? And that's actually a mindfulness inquiry that is often used. So it does all tie in together, but it's so true that in yoga, I mean, at least out here in the West, a lot of times we're taught to, and this is at least the meaning I took on to it in the beginning of my practice and becoming a teacher, and, you know, in these trainings really like taught to and encouraged to be this enlightened one, this very present, very joyful, very grateful, you know, and if you're not, then, you know, you might be doing it wrong. And again, this is the meaning I took on to it. I'm not saying this is like exactly the trainings that I've received. Granted, I will say that it has been part of some trainings I've received. But while there is a very intelligent tool and training to that, like I have a gratitude journal, you know, I'm all about it. But there is also other stuff that's here, and you can't argue with reality when you refuse to recognize the other stuff that might be here. That age of Annie that's like knocking on the door asking to be recognized. So the spiritual bypass is a very real thing, and it's a protector. It's also a protector, you know. Why do we do it? Because we're not ready, or we don't want to face the painful stuff that might be here. So again, it's back to like what we were talking about in the beginning. These parts have this well-deserved attention that we should be giving them the floor, and to get to those shame parts, those really painful parts, as you were saying, is not exactly to go straight to them, but to really, you know, so one end of the spectrum is spiritual bypass, and the other end of the spectrum is like that wounded part, the real, real painful part, you know? And it's like, well, just what's here right now? You know, it's most likely some protector that is not really letting you see that extreme wounded part. So we've got to create this relationship first with this protector. And it might be a part that shames you, or a self-critic, or something like that. And it is about getting to know that part so that it will be able to step aside and let you talk to the wounded part. Because we never want to like overwhelm the system with this work either. And to your point earlier, these shame parts, self-critic parts, do often take on messages that aren't actually yours. They might be your parents, siblings, uncles, teachers, even, you know. And recognizing that, which is much easier to do with a facilitator, like a coach or a therapist that does IFS. Recognizing like what part of this part is actually you, and how much of it is your mom or your dad, or, and then it's a little bit easier to like step back and recognize that, oh, this isn't me, you know, it kind of releases that attachment of belief that you're supposed to be a certain way. And that is often taken on by a child being around their parents, and their parents either reacting to them or not even exactly reacting to them, but the child witnessing them reacting in some way, maybe chaotic, angrily. And it's not even about them. It's not even to them, towards them. That might be on the phone with somebody else or something like that. But when a child, like a very young child, sees that, again, children just try to make sense of things as best they can. They will see, the brain sees that as, oh, that's who I am to them. So whatever I'm doing right now is causing this reaction. So I have to do something different to then gain their love, because without their love, I can't survive. And that biologically, we know instinctually. So we're going to do whatever we can to get our parents to love us.
Even, yes, which now
doesn't make any sense.
Yes, it does. That goes into the layers of attachment theory and codependency.
Yeah, yeah. No, sorry.
Interdependence. The other thing from that. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say that I wasn't saying that it doesn't make sense. It makes perfect sense. Biologically, that's like, you know, our need. It's our number one need. But the way we might go about it, because it makes sense to us in that moment, may not actually make sense.
Yes, absolutely. And to your point about the child making meaning from what's happening and caring to understand to their caregiver and all of those things, a lot of times what is happening is that the caregiver is experiencing their own internal reactions and responses to their internal parts. which then the child is taking personally and learning how to mimic that behavior of how to manage the community of your own internal family system. And to to the car metaphor again and come in with that, I found, I'd be curious how this feels for you too, of, well, I was saying earlier about all the parts have room in the car. There's also parts that will attempt to ride along in the car that are not my parts, that are someone else's parts.
That's right.
And they're giving that voice, and a lot of the being real, that reality, like you were saying, of what's actually coming up right now in the present and what is seeking attention is discerning, okay, well, is this my part or is this someone else's part? And if this is my part, how can I, like you were saying, give this full and give it the floor? And if this is not, if this is someone else's part, how can I compassionately say, get the fuck out of the car?
Well, and I
just, my therapy work has been super ego and some of that stuff with IFS and EMDR and saying, leave, get out, go away. And
I think
for you, how you discern, is this my part or is this someone else's?
Well, I ask the part, you know, how much of this is yours, how much of this is my parent, and just by, you know, letting it show you, you might have a memory come up of your parent or whoever it is saying the thing that this part says to you all the time, you know, or maybe expresses somehow externally that now you actually say the thing that your parents were saying to you. You know, oftentimes people treat their children because of how they were treated, right? So their parts are responding to the child. Let me rewind. A parent's parts that had once were developed and not healed, like say this parent has never done this work, they have parts that were wounded by their parents, right? And they built protective parts around that. It is those parts that is then responding to their child.
Absolutely. It can be outrageous to trace back through patterns and see a parent start to zoom out from the system overall of your biological family of origin and then also your internal family of parts, and really giving them all.
Yeah, and it might not even be like super individual like that, like where this goes into like legendary parts. For example, my grandparents were survivors of the Holocaust. So there's a lot there that is within me that I may not be conscious of because I wasn't around for that, but yet lives in my system, no doubt.
Absolutely. Both spiritually and biologically, epigenetically, those memories are in your cells.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, like, you know, I can't be too sure about this, but one example of that is it's a lot less now because I've done a lot of work around this, but I used to have very many intrusive thoughts of my dog child being hurt in some way, you know, getting into a car accident and then he like flies around the car or something, and then, or maybe I'm in the kitchen and he's like walking around and I drop the knife and it like goes through him. I mean, I've had these like horrid thoughts of him getting hurt in some way. And we've mapped that back to, because this part tells me it is this, and no, I don't have hard evidence to prove it, but, you know, my grandmother, my mom's mom, did watch her children die right in front of her from the Nazis. And I just want to preface this by saying I am in no way comparing my experience to her experience, but is there possibly a part that feels this fear and anticipates something that it epigenetically already went through?
Absolutely. To me, there is a pattern. There is a connection between where it's coming from and part of the whole community system to trace through. And even sit with, like you were saying, of I can't compare, while also sitting with the part that can compare, can look through.
That's right.
The history, pattern, and again, really to your of the pain and being with these death, sex, money, body dysmorphia, disordered eating, these things that are collectively taught to shame and not talk about. And
yeah.
And to talk about it openly when it feels good, right, and safe to you.
Right, right, absolutely. Yeah, you know, there's just so many parts. So it makes sense that, you know, minds change, and that, yeah, two things can be here at once. Like, okay, I can compare that, and I can also see that it's different. And to your point earlier about other parts getting into the car, just to tie this back to community, what's so great about this work is that we can start to see, if we do this work consistently, we can start to see other people's parts. And then that, sorry, the siren's crazy loud. And then that actually offers space for compassion and space for that person's part. Maybe I'll wait until this passes by. Sorry.
All good. It's cool timing. It's giving an exclamation to what you're saying. And I so, appreciate you tying it back to this and the community of even us as a two-person community on this podcast with the third person listening of having community to be with and understand and love more on,
right,
our own internal community than the system where,
mm-hmm, yeah, just as we have like parts arguing with each other or working together or being hurt or being joyful or conniving or whatever, other people have those parts as well. And so when we start to engage with each other, oftentimes it's our parts that are engaging with each other. It's very rarely ourselves, our capital S selves, that are engaging with each other. And so the more we can get to that and recognize our parts and other people's parts coming up, then yeah, we can allow for that sense of community and that greater belonging that's really there. But I do also want to touch on what you were just trying to bring up with, you know, how we're taught to not talk about certain like shameful things. And that's all based on, you know, that links to what we were talking about right before that, which is like the messages that we were given by parents and also society. A lot of these things are societal. You brought up body dysmorphia and food. You know, that is, at least here in the US, it's very societal. Oftentimes, the messages that we give ourselves about our body, and the needs that we feel around our body are not ours. It can be generational. It can simply be societal. I mean, specifically with that, it's everyone. It's ancestral. It's societal. It's the immediate, what is the word I'm looking for? The immediate system around us. And it can be very, very difficult to talk about, because, yeah, there's a lot of shame around it. That's just not ours, you know?
Totally. On a larger humanity community level, that same thing on the personal level of not wanting to sit with the pain or only being able to sit with a certain amount of pain at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
All these things, they're the most human of things of everyone has a body. Everyone came here because people had sex. Everyone is going to die. Everyone needs to deal with money, since money has been a thing for most of human history, and everyone gets sick at some point. Like, our most basic sort of humanings.
Yep. Humanings. I love that. Yeah. And it's a hard one, because sometimes it is really hard to see, you know, how much, because it just feels so personal. It feels like it's so much yours, you know? I mean, for me with body image stuff, it just feels, I can intellectually talk to you about how it's societal and stuff, but I don't embody that. It's something that I'm still working through very, like, I'm not even in the thick of it, I would say, but there's still so much to go there. And it is hard when it's not yours, because it's hard to differentiate, you know. It's easier to feel things that are actually yours, if that makes sense, because they're yours. So it's a little bit like confusing when it's, societal and making that connection and mapping, like, why it's there, you know?
Totally. And going
why it's in your system. Yeah.
Why what?
Why it's in your system.
Yeah, like going through it to say, how did you get here? Why are you here? What are you here to teach me? Navigating through all of those things. I'd love to end on, well, we'll have to save this for our next one, to get into marketing and how that's connected, although maybe that's very clear of marketing being part of that community society voice of expectations around different parts of being human. I would love to end on. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, do you mean like marketing in general, like what marketing is to the world, or in me?
I guess consciously I meant more generally. Having experience, having created and been a part of that industry, and so then seeing and having another lens to look at how marketing impacts internal family systems generally, and also how marketing impacts your own personally.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is linked to you know, what we were just talking about with body image and telling people who they should be if they want to feel this certain way. And, you know, but yeah, definitely big enough for a whole nother episode.
Yeah, that one definitely is deserving of a lot of space for me, because also that can get so spiritually bypassed of not being able to care about your body or have preferences for your appearance or different physical characteristics of your surroundings or any of those things. And I'm glad too, I want to touch on before closing what you brought up of getting perspective on other people and your interactions with other people and knowing that they're navigating their own internal parts as well.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that has been a very helpful part of it for me too, that we're all, and then with our communities of people we're recording a podcast with and therapists and friends, and that helping each other navigate our different parts and figure out how to make sure that ourself is what is driving the car.
Yeah, and I think essentially like the key thing to leave with that is that to understand that, like, again, I'm repeating myself, that there are no bad parts, that they are all well-intentioned to bring the system back to balance, back to homeostasis. So when someone else, when you're engaging with someone else and it's clearly a protective part, you know, they get snippy with you or something like that, it's like, okay, I can understand that they're protecting themselves, you know? They're like wearing a mask, as Tara Brock would say, mindfulness teacher, but that doesn't go to say that people should not be held accountable. People should always be held accountable for their actions. And all in the while, there can also be an understanding as to, you know, that they must be protecting themselves.
Totally. And that the responses, reactions coming up in you are your parts protecting yourself. And
that's right.
Like we were talking about, mm-hmm. the parts engaging and interacting. The whole game 100%. And dance. And
that's right. Whatever.
I'd love to end on hearing about, with your perspective on yoga and mindfulness, how it feels in your body, to end on coming back to being in a body when you're giving a part the floor, and how you need to connect to our other podcast about the compass of your own body, to know, is this part mine? Is this part someone else's? Has this part gotten enough attention? What does it want? I'd love to hear a little about that body as a compass for your parts.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think that I'm really glad that you brought up this question, because I don't think that we gave it enough. We didn't speak to also it enough.
It's also another whole episode for sure.
Totally. But I personally, so with IFS, people can like see their parts, feel their parts, simply sense their parts. And I don't imagine it so much. I more feel it than anything. And, you know, these parts, they live within us, and our experiences, our history, live within our body because we lived them. And so when we can, you know, something comes up, a feeling comes up, a part, we can navigate through that by feeling into what is here sensationally now. And that's how I do it in my own work every time, is I feel a sensation. So when I say being with a part, I am being with that sensation. And sometimes it's really uncomfortable, and it's those sensations that motivate our protectors to act. Because if a sensation is so uncomfortable, then we do something to like minimize that sensation. Or, you know, trick ourselves into thinking it's not there or something like that. And then, you know, that's how we get sick and all kinds of stuff. But yeah, letting that being with these sensations as they change and move and express themselves within the body allows them to maybe not right away, but become not so intense, not so uncomfortable, not so disliked by other parts. And yeah, so that's how I use yoga and mindfulness to help me in my work and IFS, you know, getting to know my parts for sure. Mindfulness is a big part of IFS regardless. It's not just because I come from teaching yoga and stuff. It's you begin a session by feeling and sensing into what's here right now. And that might be feeling, that might be the mind's eye seeing and hearing some inner dialogue. And not dialogue as in like back and forth, but like, you know, inner messages, I should say. Sensing into your inner world, you know, internal family systems. It's internal. It's our internal system. And it informs us to navigate through our external systems.
I'm glad you brought up the part about the discomfort being a part of it. It's okay, and that also that can pass and can change maybe as you observe it and give it the floor.
And I just want to say that being with these parts, whether uncomfortable, super painful, you know, hard to be with, you never have to force yourself into being with anything that might be too painful. Sometimes it's wise to just do something else. And it's also wise to straight up ask these parts, like, please don't overwhelm me. Because these parts, they're very smart. And you don't ever have to, like, they'll talk, they'll be with you when they're ready. So sometimes it can be just like touching in and touching out.
That's a really important reminder as well, that there's no forcing of the parts. And that's not the style of the self.
Right. That's right.
That there things are gonna there's some sense of self that is there observing and peaceful and loving all of the parts. And the discomforts will come up as they're ready. And sometimes with a coach or a therapist or on a podcast.
Yeah, definitely. I would recommend most of the time should be done with a facilitator. because, you know, like we said, you know, our parts engage with other people's parts and our self engages with other people's self. And so when you're with a facilitator that can be in their self, can help you attune to your self just by being in community with another. And also can be a great additive to, you know, seeing something that you might not be seeing if you're too blended with a part, if you're too overwhelmed with a part, and they might be able to suggest, you know, taking a step back or asking that part not to overwhelm you, or if they're trauma informed, which most IFS facilitators are, they can give you some trauma informed tools to help you get out of an overwhelming moment, because we don't ever want to re-traumatize the system. And so it is really helpful to be with someone else.
Thank you for connecting it back to community and also bringing up attunement. It makes me laugh, and I love the metaphor of us as tuning forks and getting to tune, doing their parts work to do ours.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to put all the information where people can find you in the description of this so people can reach out and connect it. Talk about parts, do some yoga. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your time and your parts and yourself.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. All my parts feel heard and were joyous to be with yours. And yeah, thank you. Thanks everyone for listening.
So much, listeners, for tuning in, and thanks for being you.
Hey, thanks for sticking around till the end. Please check out theannyaltmanshow.com and also patreon.com/theannyaltmanshow if you're able and interested in donating $1 or more per month to these projects. Non-dollar ways to share value includes and is not limited to sharing anything, the podcast, any YouTube video, any blog post, any social media account, subscribing, following anywhere, rating or reviewing anything, sending any feedback or ideas, and or connecting me with people for the podcast or other projects you feel would enjoy this work. In my opinion, word of mouth is the only, quote, real advertising, so here I am using words from my mouth.